I had been advised to sit down with unsophisticated, inexperienced country people, who had not the remotest idea of Spiritism, to worship after the manner of the early Christians, far from all outside influence, in my own parish. Should I take the risk? What would people say? I felt the fear of my fellowmen's opinion rising within me. Would not my own parishioners consider me mentally unsound if I were to undertake anything of that kind? And if my ecclesiastic superiors heard of it, would I not lose my position? A desperate struggle raged within me. Which alternative should I choose? For I knew that decide I must, now or never. At no time in my life have I prayed more fervently to God than I did then. In the end, I resolved to follow the directions I had received, even if it meant the greatest personal sacrifices, including the loss of my position and my means of support. This, then, was my decision. No sooner had I taken it than I became inwardly completely calm and able to confront the future with the utmost confidence. The corroboration of the truth. You, however, are among those who have received the spiritual anointment of truth from the Holy One and are therefore initiated into the whole truth. I John 2:20. I had decided, regardless of the consequences, to select a few individuals in my own parish and to arrange for meetings with them, like those I had attended in the neighboring town. As yet I had no idea as to whom to select, for I had been told that everything would be taken care of as soon as I was prepared to act. And so it turned out. I had no need of seeking the people. They were brought to me by a strange chain of circumstances, without any effort on my part. There was in my parish an invalid woman who was partly paralyzed, and on whom I used to call several times a week. A sister of hers was married to a man in my parish. She had four children, from 20 to 28 years of age, three sons and a daughter. One evening as I sat talking with the invalid, one of her sister's sons came in and asked whether his mother was at the house. He was told that she had been there but had left to attend to some errands and would be back soon, whereupon the boy sat down to wait for her. Shortly afterwards his mother arrived, and a few moments later her other two sons, who had come to fetch their brother. They had arranged with some of their companions to meet that evening at the home of a certain family. After another short interval the daughter appeared. She was a nurse, and had come to ask me whether one of the sick people of the parish would have to be watched during the night. That made seven of us who were present. Suddenly one of the sons began to speak of the sermon that I had delivered on the previous Sunday, in which I had cited a passage from the Bible with which they were entirely unfamiliar. I explained that particular passage of the Holy Writ to my hearers, who listened to me with the greatest attention. When I had finished, one of the sons remarked that he wished he could more often have a chance to hear various parts of the scriptures explained to him. I told him that I would be glad to meet with them all at the home of his invalid aunt and to answer any questions they might lay before me, for in a like manner the early Christians had assembled at each other's homes to discuss matters of religion. All of those present eagerly welcomed my suggestion, and we immediately fixed upon the evenings on which we were to meet. The first few of our evening meetings took place without any unusual incident. We always opened them with a prayer, after which, holding hands, we sat for a few minutes in silence, concentrating our thoughts. There followed a reading from the Holy Scriptures, interpretation and discussion of the contents, and any questions asked by those present would be answered. We would also deliberate about how best to help the needy of our immediate neighborhood and its surroundings. I was much impressed with how seriously especially the three brothers took the matter, and not only I, but their mother also, observed something peculiar. The faces of all three of them were assuming a much finer and nobler expression. Even strangers remarked upon it. Furthermore, one of them confided to me that something inexplicable was taking place within him. When he was at work out in the field, an inner voice constantly exhorted him to praise God and to give him thanks. Such thoughts had never come to him before. And now, whenever, quick-tempered as he was, he gave way to a fit of rage, it would weigh so heavily upon his soul that he would feel compelled to stop his work until he had asked God to forgive his offense. Only then could he happily resume his work. Previously he would offend in this way dozens of times a day without experiencing any compunction. It was the same thing I, too, had experienced since the day I had attended that first meeting in the neighboring city. Offenses and careless behavior, to which I had never paid any mind, now burned like fire in my soul. It happened, at our fourth meeting, that I had been interpreting a certain passage in the Bible, my interpretation being the same as that given today by all Christian authorities on the Scriptures, for at the time I knew of no other. I had not yet completed what I was engaged in saying, when one of the boys became inexplicably excited, looking at me with a strange gleam in his eyes. I could see that he was struggling hard against some inward emotion. Suddenly he turned to me, trembling in his whole body, and said, "I cannot help myself. I must tell you that your interpretation is incorrect. I'm being compelled to give the correct interpretation." With that, he uttered the sentences that had been inspired in him for the interpretation of this passage of the Bible. What he said was so clear and convincing that neither I nor any of the others could have any doubts of its correctness. 28. We had not yet recovered from our amazement, when the same boy exclaimed, "I must write." "Why, what are you going to write?" I asked him. "That I do not know, but I am being compelled by an irresistible power. Give me a pencil and paper." We gave him both, and immediately he began to write rapidly, continuing until he had covered a sheet of folio size. One letter was joined to the next, so that there were no spaces between words or sentences. At the bottom appeared the word "Salzur." The document contained a teaching of great value to us. The boy asked me the meaning of the word "Salzur," and I told him it was a Latin one, signifying the higher one or a higher one. I now asked him what his sensations had been during his recent experience. He answered that he could not find the right words to describe them, that he had been under the influence of a power so great that he could not resist it, although he had done his utmost to strive against the impulse to tell me that my interpretation of the Bible was wrong, for he had, of course, been convinced that my explanation was correct. But in the end he had been compelled, first to speak and then to write. He had felt as though his own thoughts had been crowded out and replaced by others. He had known that he was writing, and had been aware of the contents of each sentence, but only while uttering or writing that particular one. As soon as one sentence was completed, he had lost all recollection of it, his mind being fully taken up with the next, and he had been compelled to utter or to write it in the exact words in which he had received it. He had been unable to pay any attention to the letters, the spelling or the punctuation while writing. After concluding his interpretation of the biblical passage mentioned and his writing, he had completely forgotten what he had said and written, so that he was quite unable to repeat a word of either. We were still discussing the occurrence, when one of his brothers announced that he could no longer attend our meetings because he found that he could not keep his head still and that it was continually being turned from side to side against his will. He had done his best to control this tendency, but without success. I, too, had noticed this motion of his head, and so had his mother, who looked at me questioningly and in alarm. I reassured her and the young man by telling them that they need not fear, for what we were doing could not possibly be wrong. It was true, I added, that we did not understand everything that was happening here, but that it would undoubtedly soon be made clear to us. Similar phenomena had occurred at the gatherings of the first Christians, a statement which I confirmed by reading aloud the 14th chapter of the first epistle to the Corinthians, which I explained as best I could at that time. What had taken place on that evening was as new to me as it was to the rest. At the meetings in the city I had witnessed the manifestation of a spirit through a wholly unconscious person. The fact that spirits could use human beings in the full possession of their faculties as instruments, and especially, that they could cause these to speak and to write, was quite outside of my previous experience. I was completely at a loss to understand what was taking place in the boy whose head was being moved to and fro. I was therefore very glad to have the opportunity of asking for an explanation of these matters on the occasion of my next attendance at the Sunday séance in town. There I was told, "Do not worry if every point is not completely clear at the outset. The subject is still quite new to you, and there are many points for which you do not yet have the correct concepts. But little by little you will come to understand them all. It is similar with your human inventions and discoveries. At first a newly discovered fact is considered impossible and its discoverer mentally abnormal. Years later the same discovery is universally recognized and regarded as obvious. How many people 100 years ago could have conceived of your modern airplanes, your telegraph, your telephone, let alone your radio? Had anyone then predicted that the time would come when people could fly through the air, speak with distant places and listen, in their own homes, to a concert being given hundreds of miles away, he would not have been taken seriously. And it is precisely the scientists who would have scoffed the most at any such possibilities. You have been told, and are seeing for yourself, that the spirit world can communicate with mankind, as soon as the necessary conditions have been fulfilled. Most people do not believe this and consider it impossible, just as formerly people did not believe in the possibility of much of what is reality today. So, too, your scholars now refuse to accept that the spirit world is able to enter into your lives in a manner perceptible to your senses. And yet, even in your own day there are thousands of occurrences those very scholars can verify as indisputable facts, and, what is more, as facts that can be attributed only to intervention by the spirit world. But your scholars seek other causes for these occurrences, and ask you to accept the most senseless and incredible explanations to account for these facts in a human way, so that they need not acknowledge the existence of a spirit world and a beyond. Some of them take this position because they deny a life after death, others, because they lack the courage as scientists to speak up for the intervention of spirits, although inwardly they are convinced that it exists. They are afraid that their professional reputations might suffer in consequence. But the time is coming when your sciences, too, will be forced to admit that the spirit world, both the good and the bad, intervenes visibly and perceptibly in your lives and your fortunes, and does so in a great variety of ways. You must not be surprised, therefore, if you are today considered as not quite normal when you declare that you have spoken with a spirit. I am, however, amazed at the fact that your various religious denominations refuse to admit the possibility of the intervention of the spirit world and of its communication with mankind today, or why, if they do admit it, they contend that it can be only the evil spirit world that manifests itself today. Such a position is utterly untenable, for if it is impossible for spirits to reach you today, it was equally impossible in the past, and all biblical accounts of communication with spirits must be relegated to the realm of myth. If, on the other hand, it is only evil spirits that can make their presence known to you today, then the same was true formerly. This would mean that all religions based on either the Old or the New Testament would collapse like a house of cards, for they certainly claim to have received their religious truths and laws through spirits. If, then, it was good spirits that visited mankind in the past, there is no reason for doubting that they are able to do so today as well, for it is the same God who sent the spirits then, and who sends them today. Just as he tried then to guide mankind onto the right path, so he does today. Or do you think that you are no longer in need of teaching and guidance from God's spirits? Do you perhaps think you are better and wiser than the people of old, and that you possess the whole truth? What you experienced in your parish is a confirmation of what you are learning from me. You will witness much more. Have no fear for the boy who cannot keep his head still. We are working on him and you will see with your own eyes how the different mediums are developed. The word medium means instrument. Mediums are therefore human beings used by the spirit world as instruments, to enable it to communicate with mankind. Animals may also be employed for the purpose, but we shall not speak of these for the moment. 31. If human beings are to serve the spirit world as instruments, they require development, which is accomplished by the spirit world and takes more or less time, depending on the individual, but more particularly on the purpose for which the medium is to be employed. When the time comes, I shall instruct you thoroughly as to the different kinds of mediums and the details of their development. Today, I shall tell you only enough about it to enable you to understand what will happen at the next meetings in your parish. You have there at present two kinds of mediums undergoing development at the hands of the spirit world. One is a so-called inspirational medium. A spirit instills certain thoughts in him with such force that the medium's own thoughts are completely expelled from him, leaving him completely under that spirit's power. The medium not only receives the thoughts from the spirit, but is compelled to speak them or to write them down, all the while retaining full consciousness. Your inspirational medium requires further development to perfect his receptiveness to messages from the spirit world. It is still necessary to remove from him much that now obstructs the process. What that is you cannot understand now, but it will become clear to you later. The other medium, who is not yet active, is in the first stage of development. I mean the boy who could not keep his head still at your last meeting and who was frightened by this. He will become a speaking medium, his own spirit will be driven out of his body, and another spirit will occupy it and speak through it. This state is called the trance. There are various gradations of trance, depending on whether the medium's own spirit is completely or only partly separated from the body. The way in which this separation is accomplished is something that you will find difficult to understand, but it will be explained to you in detail on a later occasion. The development of a full trance or deep trance medium is not a pleasant sight, but it is necessary and proceeds according to eternal laws. In order that the medium's mother may not be unnecessarily frightened by what takes place, it will be best for her to stay away from the meetings for the time being. The development of mediums is an important and sacred matter, and you must, therefore, at your sittings, pray a lot for the mediums, asking God for help and strength, so that everything may be done according to His will. And the mediums may become useful tools for the good and remain faithful to God. What I have told you today was necessary so that you may have some understanding of what goes on during the development of your mediums, and so that you may not feel alarmed over the things which you may see happening with them. Everything that I had been told about the training of the two mediums in my parish came true to the letter. The boy who had been described as an inspirational medium progressed rapidly. He was inspired with detailed teachings concerning the most important truths and committed them to writing. They contained things entirely new to me and were, to a large extent, quite contrary to what the boy had hitherto believed and what I myself had proclaimed in my sermons as the truth. There was thus no possibility of trying to explain the phenomena with the workings of the subconscious or with thought transmission, as people so often do. Thought transmission was utterly out of the question, because everything the inspirational medium set down from this point on was committed to writing not at our meetings but at his own home and without anyone else being present. The boy would not sit down to write of his own accord, but would on each occasion be obliged to do so by that same irresistible force that had taken possession of him for the first time at the meeting I have described. Even the precise moment would be determined by that force. Once he was awakened very early in the morning, long before the usual time of rising, and was summoned to get up and write. He did not obey the summons, thinking the hour too early to get up, when suddenly he felt himself pulled forcibly out of bed and laid upon the floor. Thoroughly frightened, he sprang to his feet and sat down to write. He wrote remarkable observations on redemption, which do not agree in a single point with what he, as a Catholic, had been taught on the subject, and which do not resemble, even remotely, anything that can be found elsewhere. In a like manner he, an uneducated country lad, wrote a treatise on the Holy Writ, which contains truths that are entirely new. Not only the content but also the phrasing of these writings are such that the boy could never have created them out of his own head. He wrote treatises in prose on the following subjects: the spiritualization of the soul, God's mercy, what has your Redeemer done for you, spring, summer, fall and winter, the harvest, the night, beseech ye the Lord, the Holy Writ, a child's love, and the death of a mortal. Just as the sole subject of all of his prose writings was God's truths, so too were his poems, the hero's call, the language of creation, hail and hosanna, in the pathways of God, God's shepherd and his flock, the stronger one, and thus works thy creator. The development of his brother as a speaking medium took more time, and the appearance of his physical condition on these occasions was often alarming. I was therefore glad that I had been warned of this beforehand, since otherwise I might not have had the courage to persist to the end. As for the boy's mother, I had asked her to stay away from the meetings for the time being. After his development had been completed, he would pass into the so-called trance state in the same way as I had first observed in the case of the speaking medium in the city. The spirit being that first spoke through him arrived with the greeting, "God mit uns. God be with us," swearing that it was one of God's good spirits and making known its name. Through this spirit I received a wealth of instruction and teachings, all of which was in harmony with what I had learned from the inspirational medium of my own parish and, especially, from the medium in the city. In this connection there were two things that struck me. In the first place I could detect a difference in rank between the spirit speaking through the medium in my parish and the spirit employing the medium in the city, for several times, when I asked some very important question of the former spirit, he would refuse to answer, with the remark, "I am not authorized to reply to that question. Ask him." With him he was referring to the spirit that spoke through the medium in the city. Whenever he uttered the word "him" in reference to that spirit, the medium bowed low. The first time he referred me to that spirit, I asked the spirit before me whether he knew the other one. "I know him," was the reply, again uttered with a deep bow. At first I could not quite understand why the spirit speaking through the farmer boy should not be permitted to answer questions as freely as the one for which the boy in the city acted as a medium, and one day I asked the latter spirit for the reason. He informed me that the customs of the spirit world were similar to those on earth insofar as when a messenger is sent on a definite errand, he is expected to deliver only the message entrusted to him and nothing else. Thus, being himself duly authorized by God, he had the right to answer any questions of mine if he considered such answers necessary or useful, but the spirit speaking through the boy in my parish, he added, was allowed no such latitude, and was in duty bound to refer me to his superior with respect to any questions that, in his subordinate capacity, he was not permitted to answer himself. The other difference that I noticed was that it was always one and the same spirit that spoke through the boy in the city, whereas several different spirits spoke through the speaking medium of my parish, although the highest of these remained the leader. It always came to us with the greeting "God mit uns," and was recognizable by its gentle voice and its manner of speech. It was also always the first one to speak at the meetings held in my parish. One day I asked it how it happened that only one spirit would speak through the medium in the city, whereas the medium it employed served several other spirits as well. The answer was as follows: a definite task has been allotted to the other spirit, and for this purpose the medium in the city has been appointed to its exclusive use. For this reason no other spirit beings may enter that medium. On the other hand, the medium through whom I speak, although developed for my use, may, by God's will, be employed by other spirits, good and bad, high and low, as well. In this way you are to be allowed to become familiar with the different kinds of spirits and to learn from their speech and actions about their state in the beyond. Above all, you will learn something of the path that low spirits must follow in order to attain perfection. It is most important that you should gather such personal knowledge of the spirit world by means of its manifestations through mediums, for thus you will learn far more of the subject than you could by any amount of oral instruction. However, any spirits that may manifest themselves through the medium here will not come and go as they please. They are subject to a controlling spirit appointed to determine which spirits may enter into the medium and how long they may remain there. Such a control exists in the case of all mediums who serve as instruments for the good, and the same is true of all seances at which communication is held with spirits after the manner willed by God. In the absence of such control, nothing truly good or beautiful can be accomplished, because the good and high spirits do not appear. They come only to those places in which everything is done as directed by God, and in which one of his spirits keeps order. At most of the spiritistic gatherings of today this control is lacking, and as a result they become the playgrounds of the lower spirit world. During the early stages, I shall tell you beforehand what spirits shall enter the medium and how you are to conduct yourself toward them. Later, you will be able to distinguish among them yourself, and will know what to do in each individual case. That is precisely what happened. A great number of spirits made use of the speaking medium of my parish. Among them were high spirits, which entered lauding and praising God, taught us matters of great importance, and departed after bestowing God's blessing on us. There were also spirits undergoing great suffering, which often implored our help in heart-rending words, beseeching us to pray with them. At times they spoke in some foreign language and, finding that we could not understand them, turned away disconsolate. Furthermore, there were low spirits, which cursed themselves and their fate, reviling us and scoffing at everything high and sacred in the most unmeasured terms. When we urged them to join us in prayer to God, they refused with expressions of scorn or hate. If we insisted that they utter the name of God, they immediately departed out of the medium. Very numerous indeed were the spirits that did not realize at all that they had been separated from their earthly bodies by death. They believed that they were still on earth and engaged in the occupations that they had followed in life. These were the so-called earth-bound spirits. Our most dreadful experiences were those with the spirits of criminals. They constantly saw themselves haunting the scene of their crime and again witnessed what had taken place during its perpetration, like a film that repeats itself over and over again. The spirit of the murderer was forever engaged in plotting and carrying out the murder in all its details and described its thoughts and feelings during those terrible hours in words that made us shudder. It saw the victim gazing steadily at it with a look that drove it to despair. A similar fate pursued the spirits of usurers and other evildoers who had brought want and misfortune upon their fellow men. Wherever they might turn, they were confronted with the figures of their victims. The suicide's spirits ceaselessly re-experienced the sensations, the outbursts of despair and the events that had attended his suicide. No actor on earth could play his role so realistically as these spirits depicted the experience of the darkest hours of their lives through the bodies of these mediums, who were utterly inexperienced, uninstructed and innocent in such matters. Often what we saw and heard was enough to make us tremble in every limb. 36. Now and then we would be visited by so-called bantering spirits, which tried to amuse us with their pranks and lies. As we showed no desire for their company, they were obliged to depart as quickly as they had come. The appearance of these different types of spirits and the incidents connected therewith were of the utmost significance. The high spirits brought us valuable instruction and at times earnest admonitions and reprimands, and so not infrequently one or another of the participants burst into tears. More than once the most secret thoughts of someone present were laid bare, although this was always done in such a manner as not to humiliate him in the eyes of the rest. It is, indeed, characteristic of the good spirit world that it always administers its censure and reproof in such a way that it never hurts, and it always accompanies its admonitions and reprimands with expressions of consolation, encouragement and love. The good spirits do not break the bruised reed and do not extinguish the glowing spark, but with gentle hands bind up the wounds in the hearts of those committed to their care. They do not, as a rule, repeat many times their warning or advice relating to the same subject. If no heed is paid to their words, they may, perhaps, remind their hearer of them once or twice, but not more often, or if so, only in the rarest cases. But if someone strives diligently to follow their advice or to obey the warning, they come back to the subject again and help him with their loving advice and encouragement, until he has reached his goal. Whenever the mortal shows genuine goodwill, their love and mercy know no bounds, not even in those cases in which human frailty leads him to stumble again and again. If, however, someone doesn't even try to do as one of these messengers from God bids him and later asks for guidance in another matter, he will generally be told, "Why do you consult me when you do not do as I say?" The appearance of even the lowest spirits was most instructive. I shall never forget the evening on which the speaking medium was visited in quick succession by the spirits of three suicides, which furnished us with the most dreadful sight that one can witness in this field. When the last of these spirits had departed from the medium and while we were still sitting there trembling, the guiding spirit, also known as the leader, entered and addressed us with the following words. There is a profound reason why you have been shown the horrible things you saw this evening. In the first place, you were to witness what sort of rest there is in store for some people after death.